This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
If we can bring people together, if we can inspire new ideas, that would be beyond great.
One thing that we're consistently reminded of during election season is that each and every person can make a difference. Whether it's casting a vote in a super tight election or confronting a U.S. senator in an elevator, the power of one can't be easily dismissed. This week on Sea Change Radio, we explore how even someone who may not have lots of money or technical know-how, but cares deeply for the environment, can have an impact. Today we're speaking with Steve Seeger, the creator of Steve's Weave, a new environmentally focused community website, which he hopes will soon be known as the Green Craigslist. We learn about what inspired Steve to embark on this project, hear about how his passion for recycling began at a young age, and discuss his new way of connecting eco-conscious individuals to each other, to opportunities, and to action. Then we turn to the Sea Change Radio archives and meet Denise Sandoval, the founder of Lava May, a nonprofit which provides shower-equipped buses to the homeless. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Steve Seeger. He is an entrepreneur, and his latest project is a green classifieds website called Steve's Weave. Steve, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me here. I'm delighted by your interest.
First, tell us the idea behind Steve's Weave and what you hope for it to become.
Well, sure, and thank you. Almost by definition, the environmental movement is scattered and dispersed. I mean, our environmental crisis is pretty much everywhere, and so there are good actions and good responses happening pretty much everywhere. And the idea came that it would be nice to create some kind of a central switchboard where the wildly scattered people acting in the green community could have a place as a kind of fallback to communicate, to create an e-commons for the entire green community throughout America. So instinctively, if folks wanted to reach out in any kind of capacity to communicate with the green community at large, they would know where to turn to first, to counteract the kind of necessarily scattered actions and efforts that are happening to support the environmental movement.
And if somebody goes to stevesweave.net, what will they find right now, and what do you hope them to be able to find in, let's say, 6 to 12 months?
Yeah. It's organized by metacategories, things like green living and get involved, and green jobs and so on. And each of those metacategories are subdivided into smaller things, food-related things, you know, green financial planners, green travel, green organizations, volunteer opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So it really tries to cover as many applications as possible of where green effort and green ingenuity can be applied. At the moment, we're in 5 cities, which are Austin, Boston, Chicago, Denver, and Portland. You might note a nice liberal progressive bent to all of the ones we chose. We'll soon be coming into Miami and thereafter into San Diego. Our 8th city is to be determined. And we have now been favored with pretty close to around 2,000 ads. We call them stitches rather than ads to harmonize with the metaphor of the weave. So you're stitching yourself into the weave. And again, in every city, in essentially every category, there's a variety of people who are looking to contact other people to let them know what they can do, to provide them with offers that they might not know about, to provide opportunities which might be otherwise difficult to find.
Why don't you talk about some of your online experiences with the environmental needs that you might have in terms of recycling or finding reused materials that made you conclude that you needed to go and put your energy into creating this? Have you found it frustrating, and where have you had success, et cetera?
There's a long history with this. It was kind of an instinctive sense, even before recycling was current, that maybe we shouldn't be tossing quite so much stuff. So even when I was a kid, possibly vintage age 14 or so, I had heard about the beginnings of some kind of a process to keep the monumental stacks of newspapers that were passing through our family from simply going to landfill or wherever they were going at the point. So I learned of one small drop-off spot way far away from our town where they were in theory accepting newspapers. This was long before I had a driver's license, but I was still relatively well equipped with an ambition to try to do something about this. So I spent 45 minutes, 55 minutes or so, I remember calling all around the different departments of my local city hall, and then even on a county level, to try to find out where this one mythic drop-off point was. And I found it. And it turned out it was a huge hall across town. And so I figured I'd give it a shot one time. I had to take my bicycle. I loaded up as much of the micro mountain of paper that we had in the house as I could carry at any one time, bundled them together with stiff twine, and then biked easily 40 minutes across town to find essentially nothing in the middle of an industrial zone. If I remember correctly, it was just an unmarked, gray-brown metal waste paper container. And through a little kind of extrapolation from the data, I figured this was it. In fact, there were a few other papers there. And I began regularly biking across town when there was enough paper to justify it to drop off this newspaper in the one spot, in essence, the entire township, maybe the entire county that was taking it. Of course, where the paper went after I left it off is a question I decided not to trouble myself with.
And you started this at a pretty young age, as you mentioned, but give us an insight into how you see differences towards sustainability and environmental stewardship in the places you've traveled.
Well, yeah, another fairly obvious example is once I was working in England, and at that point, they had nothing set up to recycle plastic. For whatever reason, I had been steered away from the tap water, which was actually fine, or I was afraid of digestive problems, or who knows. But I was buying bottled water at the time. I thought it was safer where I was, and I didn't want to throw them out. And then they began to collect in drifts in the corner of the apartment where I was. And I began to think, okay, maybe, there's something better to do than just throwing these plastic things out. This is, of course, eons before we had any notion of the plastic patch in the Pacific or any other, sense of plastic pollution. So again, I went around and I called around. It was a little bit more difficult because I wasn't on my home turf. But I did find out rather definitively that there was no plastic recycling then being done where I was. So I figured, okay, let's do something about this. Let's try to promote this. And I had heard about something. Around this time, there was a legendary pizzeria in New York called Ray's, and not all of the derivative Ray's that it's in spawned with the famous Ray's on 6th Avenue and I think 11th Street in Greenwich Village in New York. And I had seen at some point a story of some New Yorkers who had also gone to England, of all things, to study for a while. And these young guys, these students, were rhapsodizing about the quality of the pizza at this place, Ray's, in New York. And I had a good buddy who lived around the corner. And in fact, we used to go to this one in all the time. So from the student body at their school in England, they put together a collection. Everyone was contributing something like £20, British, currency, £20 to these guys. And in exchange, they got two slices of pizza from famous Ray's on 6th Street. And with the £20 contributing from all these people, these two guys actually paid for round-trip plane tickets from London to New York. They went into Ray's, they loaded up with 8 pizzas, I believe that was the number, 8 pizzas in boxes, and then they fled back to England with the pizzas to distribute them to their fellow students. I would hope and I believe that Ray's actually subsidized this by not charging them the full amount, you know, per slice. And obviously, Ray's got involved and did some nice publicity about this. And I found the story so funny, I figured, okay, I will try to do, I will be inspired by it appropriately. And I remember when I used to spend time around there that there was one spot, at least in my awareness, in all of New York City that was accepting recycling of plastic. It was also on 6th Avenue, right around 3rd Street, in a spot right next to where there was a basketball court. And every Saturday they used to collect newspapers and also plastics. So I figured, why not? And I didn't make a special trip, but I had to go back relatively soon thereafter. So I crushed, you know, as well as I possibly could, dozens and dozens of these plastic water bottles that I had gathered with such guilt. And I stuffed them into a very, very large garment bag, one of those transport bags where you put a suit in so it doesn't get folded. So it's a large thing which folds in the middle with hangers on top. And I totally stuffed this garment bag filled with plastic bottles crushed, you know, within an inch of their life. And I crammed so many into this garbage bag that it actually stood on end by itself. The whole thing was vertical.
The garment bag, you mean, right?
The garment bag, yeah, was all vertical. All of the straps and cords and you know, hasps that you would normally use to hold this thing together while you're transport were dangling free. I managed to find a way to affix them all, you know, so they wouldn't go around. And then I took this freestanding, stiff, but essentially weightless garment bag on a flight from England to New York. And I managed to walk it through with no problem through customs on both sides. They didn't ask. They didn't look. You know, they didn't think it was anything suspicious of any kind, which, of course, is proof that this is pre-911. And I was very, very happy about this. I managed to blast it through customs in two cities. It took me a couple of days to get to the 3rd Street outpost where they did the recycling. Of course, it was only on a Saturday. And I brought it there, and I told them all about it. And they took a look at the plastic, all of which, of course, were British bottles. You know, there weren't brands that they knew. And I'm sorry to say they were a little bit lackadaisical about it. They just, dump it here. We'll see what we can do. And unfortunately, I didn't hear too much more how they use this to publicize the recycling center. But at least I left with a clean conscience.
So you were able to leave it, to bring it into the country at least.
Oh, yeah. I recycled European plastic on 3rd Street. On 6th Avenue and 3rd Street in New York City. Yeah.
And describe the face of the customs official as you brought this in and told him what you had in the bag.
Not only one. At that point, it was mostly manned, if you forgive the phrase, by retired women. But in fact, they did jump up and there were exclamation points over their eyes. And they called together all of the other people who were doing kind of the gathering and, the stacking of materials there. And they even called over a couple of the guys from the basketball court right next door who paid the supreme honor of stopping their game to watch this crackpot delivery of plastic from the other side of the Atlantic. Yeah, so they were actually quite delighted. But again, I don't really know if they followed up and publicized the visit. I actually didn't know who to contact ahead of time to do the publicity. So there might have been a little bit more fanfare if I was that resourceful.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Steve Seeger. He's an entrepreneur and a former writer and an activist, and his latest project is a green classifieds website called Steve's Weave. So, Steve, you mentioned the website is divided into some of these verticals: green living, green tech, agriculture, jobs, finance, etc. If you had pick one of them to help change the world, and let's say one of them became the go-to place on the web, looking at the landscape of the environmental movement right now and contrasting that with where the political barometer is heading in this country, if we can kind of use Steve's Weaves as a confluence of that, where would you like to see something kind of take shape and blossom?
Yeah. Certainly, I would most welcome making a contribution through our category called Get Involved. That's got four subdivisions: activism, gatherings, organizations, and volunteers. And clearly, the extent and the scope of the green movement is about mobilizing people to get engaged, to not take for granted some of the automatic behavior that they've been doing for years and years, and in fact have been instructed, you know, not to become conscientious about it. So if this can draw more people in to getting involved, to becoming more aware of what they're doing and responding appropriately, I would be pleased and gratified no end. And in fact, this is the category that has got some of the more interesting contributions. You know, Google can get you to many good places, but one of the things that the website Steve's Weave, I hope, will do, will bring to people's attention opportunities and organizations that they otherwise wouldn't even know exist. So, for instance, I know folks have listed on the website everything from an organization that helps restaurants go green. Okay, so it deals with reuse and salvaging food and utensils and cutting down on electricity and even cooking techniques that are more environmentally sensitive. There's a group that helps churches go green, to both with outreach to their congregations, but also cutting down energy use, organizing events that they're more green efficient, et cetera, et cetera. There are lots of groups out there with what to do with reusable food. That, I think, is the word at the moment, reusable. We do have nothing less than a tragedy happening in the States in that, by approximation, 40% of the food in America that could be used is thrown away. Either it is beyond some kind of arbitrary use-by date, you know, they'll say it must be consumed by October 22 and then to the 23rd, and in fact, it will be perfectly usable for weeks afterwards. Or there's a small cosmetic problem, you know, it's got a little bit of a bruise, but the rest of it is perfectly gorgeous and eatable and nutritive. Or some, you know, some vegetables are a little bit freakish. You know, you'll have, you know, carrots with two legs, et cetera, et cetera. So there are bunches of groups out there that are really mobilizing to reuse food. It keeps it away from the landfill. It gets the food to the people who could need it. This is win-win-win across the board. We have groups up there, for instance, who are looking to recruit retirees to get active in the green movement. Okay, specifically, you know, for folks 55 and over or people who are retired, what could be more wonderful to give people who might have a little bit of spare time on their hands or might be looking for something to be to get engaged in? They can be organized and recruited, and their presence, you know, forgive this, with the weight of their wisdom, with the authority of their years, with their understanding of what's at stake, to get our elders engaged in green activities, green support, is a glorious thing. And so all kinds of groups like that, which can mobilize more of the population, would be wonderful. Again, we also have all kinds of other interesting things. You know, there's a listing for a gym, you know, a workout gym, where all of the electricity for running the gym comes from the exercycles and the treadmills and so on. It is a self-sustaining gym. So things like this, if we can bring people together, if we can inspire new ideas, that would be beyond great.
Steve Seeger, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you. Thank you for getting the word around. Yes, we are live only in 5 cities now, but the website can be used anywhere. And the more people are using it, the richer it becomes and the better it becomes for the next people to visit it. So if you have anything that you're looking for green or you want to let people know that is green, that is sustainable, that's ecological, your contribution to Steve's Weave is invaluable and much appreciated.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Donise Sandoval. She's the founder of Lava May. Donise, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So for our listeners around the country, why don't you tell us what Lava May is? What is the concept?
Well, we began by taking public transportation buses and converting them into showers and toilets on wheels for the homeless. But we launched our pilot 2.5 years ago. And since then, we've not only expanded, but deepened our programming. And now we consider what we do is, you know, transforming the way that communities see and serve people moving through homelessness.
And take a step back to the inspiration behind it. What motivated you to do this?
Homelessness is an issue that I've cared about for a long time. I moved back to San Francisco from New York in 2002 and was really astounded at the number of people who were living on the street. And I knew that I wanted to do something to help. I also knew that people needed housing. So I thought long and hard and realized that that was not something that I could really help people with. But I'm an ideas person, and I just said that if I would keep my eyes open, surely I would find a need that I might be able to help with. And essentially, within a very short period of time, I passed a young woman on the street who was... saying over and over again to herself that she would never be clean. And it made me wonder what her chances were for getting physically clean, because every visibly homeless person I had seen was struggling with hygiene. And so I went online to do the research, and what I found out really shocked me, that for the 7,500 people who are homeless in this city, there are essentially 7 drop-in centers during the day where they can go to use showers and toilets, and that totaled about 16 shower stalls and about as many toilets, which was appalling. And that's a problem that you would expect perhaps in the third world, not in the United States, and certainly not in one of the most affluent cities in this country. And so very shortly thereafter, I saw an article in the Chronicle about Muni retiring their old diesel buses. And inspired by the mobile food truck movement, I started thinking we should take those buses and convert them into showers and toilets. And so Lava May was born.
And how many people do you serve now? And explain how the technology works, what you've put into these buses, if you will.
So, you know, my first vision was to put as many showers in there as possible. So we were going to put up to 7 or 6 showers and a toilet in there. And then we realized that we needed to go out and talk to people and find out what they really wanted. I mean, it's ridiculous to create something for people without involving people in the design. So we spent a lot of time on the streets having one-on-one conversations and even hosted a focus group. And we heard 3 things over and over again. The first was that if you're homeless, you live your entire life in the public eye. You never have a moment of privacy. You can imagine how stressful that must be. Second, if you are a woman or you're LGBTQ, the incidence of attack in a shower where there's more than one shower is really incredibly high. And then lastly, if you're disabled, and about 60% of the population suffer some form of disability, that it's really difficult to find a place that meets your needs and also keeps you safe. So we revamped our whole thinking about the design and decided that we would put two full bathrooms with shower, toilet, sink, and a small changing area on these buses. The front unit is fully ADA compliant, so it's quite spacious. We also decided that design was really important. The research has shown that beautiful design can really lift people's spirits. So we opted to add in skylights, we pipe in music, and we were very thoughtful about the color scheme that we used. As I said earlier, we launched our pilot in June of 2014, and since that time have provided over 2,400 homeless San Franciscans with over 14,000 showers.
And how can somebody access your showers around the city? How do they learn about it, and where can they find you?
We have a set schedule, and you can find the information on our website. We also partner with other nonprofits, so every day that we're out there, you know, in tandem with another nonprofit, parking close by their facilities so that we can serve their guests. And word spreads pretty quickly about where you're going to be, so people have yet to have any trouble finding us, unless, sadly, if we're out of service because a bus needs to be maintained or something. You know, then they're like, well, where are you? And we're working really hard to try and, you know, keep people abreast of those kinds of changes. But otherwise, we have a very set schedule.
And as you expand, how do you plan on reusing buses in the future? Will there be a steady stream of bus supply for you moving ahead?
That's a really good question, because what we've learned over the time that we've been doing this is that the buses are actually incredibly challenging, and for reasons it might seem surprising, here in San Francisco in particular, we are competing with the shuttle bus companies that, you know, transport tech employees back and forth between the valley. And it's very difficult to find a pool of drivers. We pay well, but we don't start our pay at $35 an hour. Secondly, you have to care about this issue. And then thirdly, you have to have great customer service skills, because what we've learned is how you deliver the service is as important as the service itself. And we do something we call radical hospitality, which is about providing an unexpected level of care and really connecting human to human. So it made us think long and hard about whether the buses were a viable model as we looked at expansion. And in fact, this past April, we switched to a commercial shower trailer. The additional advantage that that provides us with is that in the same footprint, we can have three full bathrooms as opposed to the two, so we can meet greater need. So as we continue to expand, we'll open our branch in Los Angeles in November. We will be launching with the commercial shower trailer.
She's the founder of Lava May, Donice Sandoval. Donice, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Charles Erland, Little Feet, and Bonnie Raitt.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.